We're starting the Mishnah in Samach Aleph Amud Aleph. So Avra Geder. So we're talking about Eish here. We're talking about the Mazik of Eish. So the Eish Avra Geder Shu Gvoa Dalet Amot. It passes over a fence that's Dalet Amot high. Then it's considered to be patur because it's Lasuke Adate. Again, it's something that we should not be in this realm of consideration that the fire should be able to cross over the Geder that's 4 Amot high. Veho Derech Rabim. O Nahar Patur. If it crosses a Derech Harabim, which we're going to see in the Gemara, Derech Harabim is 16 Amot wide. O Nahar, a river, Patur. All these cases, these are areas that should have contained the fire. And since they crossed over, he's already considered an Ones once it's crossed over these areas that he shouldn't have considered to be hazardous on the other side of these barriers. And therefore, he is considered Patur in all these cases. Now, the height of the Geder, question is, where do we start the Geder from? Where do you measure the height of the Geder from? So we're going to see the Gemara is going to qualify that statement. And we'll read the Gemara together, and then Tosfos discusses it. Vatanyo, the Gemara is going to say, Avrat Geder Shu Gva Barmot Chayav. We have a Braisa that says the opposite of our Mishnah, that if it passes over a Geder that's 4 Amot Chay, you're Chayav, as opposed to our Mishnah, which says Patur. So Amra Papa, Tana Didan, Kachashiv Mimalo the Mato. Our Tana is counting from up to down, meaning Shesh Amot Patur, Chamesh Amot Patur, Ad Arba Amot Patur. Meaning that if you go anything above 4 Amot is Patur, all the way down to 4 Amot is considered Patur. Tana Baro, the Tana of the Braisa, says Milamata Lamala. He's counting down to up. Kachashiv. Shte Amot Chayav, Shlosh Amot Chayav, Ad Arba Amot Chayav. Until 4 Amot is considered Chayav. And what is Arba Amot? So we're going to say that Arba Amot is Patur. Because that we generally say, that's a general principle, that anything we say is Dalet Amot is Kedalet Amot Lamala. That'll be Patur. So what we're going to basically say is that our Mishnah, which says Patur, is talking about Dalet Amot, Ad Vi Ad Bichlal, including Dalet Amot, and the Tana of the Braisa is saying Ad Velo Ad Bichlal, that the Arba Amot he's talking about is not including the Arba Amot itself, right? Anything up to the Arba Amot will be Chayav. Once he hits Arba Amot, he would agree that you are Patur. Now, Rava qualifies these Dalet Amot. Amar Rava, Dalet Amot, Shemru, the Patur, Afilu Bistei Kotzim. This is even in a field full of thorns and thistles, right? Things that are easily flammable, that a wall of Dalet Amot is still sufficient. Now, Amar Rav Papa, Umisfata Kotzim Lamala Dalet Amot. When we measure the wall, when we're talking about the wall, it has to be 4 Amot above the thistles, the thorn bushes, in order to be considered protective or of a protective nature. And that's what Tosfos points out over here, but when we're talking about the height of the wall, that it doesn't have to be above the top of the flame. I mean that the flame could exceed the height of the wall. The wall just has to be 4 amot above what's fueling the fire. The Tosfos calls it the atzei hadleika, right? The core fuel of the fire. And Tosfos says that he thinks that the dalet amot means from above anything that is fueling the fire, but not the flame itself. And Tosfos' proof is from the next gemara here, the next qualification in the gemara here, which is Rav. So I'm a Rav, lo shanu ela bekolachat. When we're talking about that a wall is sufficient to protect against the spread of a fire, that's when the fire burns upward. Aval benichfefet, if it is bent over the fire, afila ad me'ama chayav. No matter how high the wall is, it's irrelevant because you're going to be chayav in this case. Now, what is nichfefet? What is a bent over fire? So Rashi brings two interpretations or two possibilities about what nichfefet is. One is that the wind is blowing, so the flame does not burn upright, but because of the wind, the flames are pushed to a direction or in a direction because of the wind that is blowing. That's one possibility. That's what's shown Mori. The other lashon he brings down is nichveved ha'esh, that the esh is crawling along the ground, meaning that it's a fast-moving fire that is crawling along the ground, and that type of fire is able to cross over even wider areas or bigger areas, right? That's even if it goes over a derech reshut rabim rachav ma'od, he's chayav. Even if it crosses over a reshut rabim, then he is chayav. So now, the question about what we're talking about here, when Rav comes to qualify a statement of kolachat and nichfefet, right, what are we talking about here? Are we talking about a case of the wall? Is he qualifying or is he discussing, right, when we're talking about the tour of the wall, that's what he's talking about here, or we're talking about the Rishut Rabim? And that might be dependent on which explanation in Rashi that you're talking about. Right? If you're talking about the explanation that's crawling around the ground, then the ability to cross over areas will only be when it's wide spans like the Rishut HaRavim. Then it makes sense to say that since it's a fast-moving fire crawling along the ground, that it's able to skip or move fast, even across large spans of area that are open, like a Rishut HaRabim. And then if you believe it's the wind, it's a possibility that the wind can carry the flame over a wall, despite the height of the wall, that the wind might impact in this case. And that, the Braisa, you're going to see in a second, we're going to have a Braisa here, but in the Mishnah, over here, like if you look in Tosos, Lo Shana El B'Kolachat, Tosos down in the bottom, he says, Ageder Kai. That's definitely talking about the fence, right? We're talking about the fence that it's crossing over here. And therefore, when he says, in Rav's statement, it says, Mea Ama, not Mea Mil. Mea Ama is a height, right? A exaggeration of height. Mea Mil is an exaggeration of width or span. So obviously, when we say, so he says, the Girsun, what we're talking about here means until Mea Ama, because we're talking about the Gova, we're talking about the height that it crosses over here. Even though we're going to see in a second that the Braisa that we bring down says that Mea Mil, which seems to suggest that we're talking about spanning across areas. So Tosfos clearly believes that Rav's statement is about a fence. The Rashi, I think, will depend on which explanation he gives, whether we're talking about the fence or we're talking about the Rishut HaRabim, what is considered insufficient when it's a dleika that is nichfefet, the bent over or the blown flame. So now Gemara says, Tanya Kavati, the Rav, we have a brace that supports the position of Rav, Amed, Rav, I'm willing, but Kolachat. That all this is when it is a Kolachat, upright flame, of al nichfefet. Okay, either if it's crawling around the ground or it's blowing sideways, then, Eitzim Mitzuyin Lain, it has fuel. Afilu Ad Mea Mil Chayav. So over here it says the word Mea Mil. So even though the Tosu says, well, Mea Mil is talking about span. So this Bryce is clearly talking about even across a span of Rishut HaRabim. So why is it a proof to Rav? Well, it's still a proof to Rav because the first part of the statement of the Bryce, which is that we're talking about, Bamed Varim Moim B'Kolachat. Avomenich Fefet, right? No. So that part of the Bryce, though, is what's supporting Rav's position. There's a differentiation between Olah, where, of it to merit a straight up flame versus nechfefet, the bent flame. But over here, this brisa seems to be indicating or speaking about spans across Rishut HaRabim, not necessarily about the walls. Avra nahar o shlulit, if it passes over a river or a puddle, shem rechavim chetamot patur, that are 4 amot wide, he is patur. So even though, right, in general, when we talk about spans, like we just said before, Rishut HaRabim, we require 16 amot. Rishut HaRabim is 16 amot wide. And we require the 16 amot to be patur. Over here, the only requirement of 8 amot. The reason for that is because of the depth, right? Even if there's no water in it, but the depth of the river adds dimension to it. So not only is it 8 amot from bank to bank, but there's also depth. Of course, the Rishut HaRavim is a flat span, so therefore it needs 16 amot. But a nahar, which is a depression or has a depth in it, then you only require 8 amot. And that's even, meaning that depending if it has water, but assuming that it doesn't have water in it, even without water, it's sufficient that it's 8 amot across. Now, Derech HaRabim, Mantano, who's the one who says that Derech HaRabim is sufficient spacing? So, Amarava, Rabbi Eliezer, it's Rabbi Eliezer. Ditznan, Rabbi Eliezer, Omer, Sheish Yisrael Amot, Kederech Rishut HaRabim. There's a Mishnah, it's the next Mishnah, we're going to do in a second, that Rabbi Eliezer says 16 amot, like the Derech Rishut HaRabim. There's another Girsa that says Tanyo. But if you look in the Marshal, if you look in the Maram, they both say that the Girsa should be Tznan here because of what Tosus says here, who cares? I mean, it's not, the Gemara didn't really add anything here to say that it's Rabbi Lez's opinion that the Derech HaRabim is 16 Amot. But the answer is that what? Now we have a Stam Mishnah like Rabbi Eliezer, and then Acharkach Machloket. We'll see the next Mishnah as a Machloket. So therefore, it will be subjected to the rules of Stam V'Acharkach Machloket, and that's what the Gemara is discussing over here. That's what the Gemara is pointing out over here. All right, Onahar, all right, a river. Rav Amar Nahar Mamash. When we're talking about a river, we're talking about literally a river. Shmuel Amar Rita Didlai. When we're talking about a watering hole, right? That's a Ye'or, Rashi calls it Dolimi Menu Mashkim Sadot. That we go and take the water out to feed the fields. It's a watering hole. Manda Amar Nahar Mamash Afa Gav Delekemaya. This is what we just mentioned, that when you have a Nahar that spans 8 Amot, right, even when it doesn't have water in it, that is sufficient. Now, it's not clear from Rashi, if Rashi agrees to this principle. If you look in Rashi, when he says, Mandamar Nar Mamash, Afagav Delet Be Maya, Rashi says, the whole Verachav Habe Kederech Rabim. Since it's so wide, it's like a Derech Rabim. Implication from Rashi is that he's talking about 16 Amot over here. On the other hand, Tosfos says, no, that we're still talking about the same 8th Amot of a Nar before. And again, the reason that it's sufficient, even though a Derech Rabim requires 16 Amot, is because of the depth of the Nar, even though there's no water there. When it has water in it, then you have 8 amot. Without water, you'll require 16 amot. Where Tosfos says there's no differentiation. It's always 8 amot, even when there's no water in it, because the depth adds it. Exactly. Right, the mandam arita de delay, meaning Shmuel, who says that it's a watering hole, eat be maya in. If it has water in it, then yes, avale be maya lo. Because the whole idea of the watering hole, the reason that it makes it inaccessible or improbable that the fire will cross it is because of the water. Not because it's a large area or it's a ditch, but because it has water in it. Right. I don't know if the arita, the Gemara calls, whenever it's a wama wide, the Gemara calls it amata mayim. Rita Delai sounds like it might be bigger than an Amma wide, but it does not reach the level of Eta Mot here. Right, it's not a...
Right, as you're pointing out, Rashi on Nun Amud Bet, in defining what the Rita Delai over there calls it, says that it's a Amma Tamayim, it's a Amma deep and an Amma wide, when he's describing about the animal that fell in. So Rashi equates the two, Amma Tamayim and Rita Delai.
Again, I don't know if it has to be an Amma, even beyond Amma, as long as it's less than 8 Amot, then you don't run into the problem. You still need water to be a preventative measure. It's not Hatam. You have a Mishnah in Peah. Now, Peah, you have to take off of the corner of the field, but you have to take it off only if it's classified as a single field. You can take a single area of Peah, a corner, when the whole field is classified as one field. What's considered a division, right, or to classify or qualify as to being two fields versus one field? So, Eilom Apsikin LePeah. These are divisions in a field to make it into two separate fields. What are they? Hanachal, right? A river, Vashlulit, a puddle, V'derech Yachid, V'derech Rabim. All of these items are considered divisions and make the fields into two separate entities, and you have to take off Peah separately from each field. So, my Shlulit, what is this puddle that we're talking about here? Amar Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Makom, Shmeg Shamim, Shogulim Misham. Exactly what it means, a puddle, where the rain comes and collects. So, that's called a puddle. Rabbi Amar Rabbi Yochanan Amata Mayim Shemchaleket Shalal Legafei. Right, so over here Rabbi Yochanan says that it's an Amata Mayim. Amata Mayim is the watering channel that brings the water in. And why is it called Shalulit? Is because of the word Shalal. It brings its bounty to the fields around it, either because they draw the water from there or the water overflows the banks of the Amata Mayim and feeds the areas around there. So again, Tzvi, that's why I thought maybe the Gemara here seems to be differentiating between Amata Mayim and Arita de Delai, because the Gemara here just brings down Amata Mayim right after it talked about Arita de Delai. It doesn't, doesn't use the same terminology. Although one is a Mishnaic term and possibly, and one is a Gemara term, but it's possible that they are the same, or possible that they're different. All right, Manda Amar Makom Shemeg Shamim Shalim Sham Koshuke Amata Mayim. The one who says that it's a puddle that collects rainwater, then certainly agrees that Amata Mayim will be sufficient to block, because again, it has characteristics. First of all, it's deeper than a puddle, and number two, it has water in it, just like a puddle does. One who says Amata Mayim, he says because it has some depth to it, it has water in it, right? A puddle, lo mafsekeid. Why? Dehanu ba'agnei de'aramikru. Because those are called the basins of the earth, meaning that they're considered to be the natural topography of the ground. You know, ground is absolutely flat, and since the puddles are really just filling in what is otherwise the natural topography, and therefore it's something where fire would cross over. These aren't considered to be unusual obstacles for fire to come over, whereas Amata Mayim is something that was dug by human beings or put there by human beings, and therefore it's something that wasn't part of the natural topography. All right, so now the next Mishnah. Hamadik b'toch shelo. A person who lights a fire in his own property. Ad kama tavor adzleika. How far does the fire have to go before he becomes an anus? Meaning, how much space, how much caution does the individual have to take in order to protect himself or to be considered patur that he took proper precaution? So Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah Omer, ro'in oto kiluhu be'emsa beit kur. We look as if it's inside of a middle of a beit kur, meaning that he's basically got to have a half kur in every direction. So if he has a half kur in every direction, then he's patur because he left sufficient space to burn the fire. Elazar Omer, this is Rabbi Eliezer, which is what we quoted before. Tedzayin Amot Kederach Hushut Rabim. This is what the Gemara is quoting. Who's the Tano of our Mishnah? Derech Rabim. This is Rabbi Eliezer who says Derech Tedzayin Amot Kederach Hushut Rabim is sufficient. That's considered protective. So also over there, Derech Hushut Rabim will be must seek for the fire to be considered safe to light a fire on one side of the Hushut Rabim. Rabbi Akiva Omer. Yes, or I mean it doesn't necessarily, but yes. Whichever side he wants to be patur on, he has to have 16 amot. meaning that if he wants to put tur in all directions, he needs 16 amot in every direction. If he wants to, whichever direction he has a blank of 16 amot, then he'll be put tur in that direction. Kiva omer, 50 ama. It's got to be 50 amot spread. Rabbi Shimon omer, shalemi shalema mavir ta beira, akol lefi adzleika. Rabbi Shimon says, no, you pay for burning. And everything is lefi adzleika. Now, the havamin of the Gemara right now, and the understanding way Rashi explains it and Tosas explains it, it doesn't matter. Meaning that it sounds like from Bishimon, it's irrelevant how much space you live. If the thing, if something burns, it's your problem. That's the, whatever the Dleika does, I'll call the Fiat Dleika, whatever damage the Dleika does, you got to pay for. So that's the Havamina. The Gemara is going to reject that in a second. But what we're talking about here is empty space that has no fuel for the fire. If you have fuel for the fire, then he's not. Then he's a poshea because he allowed the fire is going to. He knows the fire is going to spread over that area. I mean, although there are two things. One, if you think nichfefet is the wind blowing, if the wind is blowing when he starts the fire, he has a sense that it will be nichfefet because the wind is blowing. That's one. Because ruach mitzuya is because if there was a ruach mitzuya before he lit the fire, then he has to anticipate it, right? He'll be chayav in that instance because the unusual fire is any factors that exist before he lights the fire, he has to anticipate. No matter how strong the wind is, if he's aware of the factors already, the only time we say he's patur is when there are things that we can say that he shouldn't have been aware of. I mean, that they were not in things that he should have anticipated. But over here, all these things are things that he should have anticipated. So now, Tzvi, to answer your question, with wind, I think you can have nichfefet if the wind's already blowing before he starts, then he could anticipate that there would be nichfefet. The other possibility, which is I think what you're suggesting, is the possibility of nichfefet if the way the fuel is lying. If everything's very low to the ground, right, and it's going to burn quickly through thistles and thorns, then he can expect that it's going to be a fast-moving, right, low fire, and that would be nichfefet. So I think the thing that is available to him, information that's available to him at the time of the fire, he must anticipate, he must deal with at that time. That's what we said on the right previous Amud. We said that afil me'amil doesn't help when you have a nichfefet, right? Yeah, that's right. I think that's what David was mentioning, that Rashi says is kolacha v'dilga, that because the space around the fire is desolate, then the only way for the fire to spread is if it jumps. And that's something that he couldn't have anticipated. I mean, he took proper precaution. If it's nichfefet is expected to spread even with a lack of fuel because it's a fast moving, or the wind is moving the fire along. All right, so now the Gemara says, later Rabbi Shimon Shiura b'tleika. What do you mean? Rabbi Shimon doesn't have any limitations on what's considered a safe fire? According to Rabbi Shimon, how are you ever going to light a fire? I mean, you can't, you never can protect. There's no such thing as protecting a fire. I mean, what's considered to be safe spacing? But not. We have a Mishnah. Lo yamid adam tenur b'toch habayit. Elam ken yesh al gabo gavoa dalet amot. You're not allowed to light a. You're not allowed to make a stove, basically a fire, in your house unless there's 4 amot of clearance above that tanur. On the other hand, if you put it upstairs, then achei tachtav maziva shloshat tefachim. Then you need at least 3 tefach of maziva, basically a plaster of separation between the upper house and the lower house. Or the lower part of the house. Bakira, and we're talking about a kira, which is doesn't fire as hot as a tanur, then you only need a tefach. Ve'im hizik, mishalem hashizik. If he did damage, then he has to pay, for the damage he did. So Rabbi Shimon Amar, lo namru, shimor elalo, shim hizik, patur mishalem. What do you mean? If he does damage, he's patur. That's exactly what the whole point of these shiurim are, to tell you, if you take proper precaution, you're not going to be chayav. But what do you see from Rabbi Shimon? Rabbi Shimon believes there are such things as proper precaution or distancing of fire away from the neighbor. All right, so now, from what you see from Rabbi Shimon is that there are certain codes of fire codes. Now, the question of who has the ability to be ma'akev over here, Tosu says that this is the house, the owners of the house and the aliyah can be ma'akev on each other. And this is a neighborly demand, that I can say to my neighbor, don't put an oven in your house until you have clearance of 4 amot. Or don't put your oven upstairs in your aliyah until you have a thickness of the floor, so I don't get affected by it. Rashi seems to say that it's Bnei Ayir Makvin, that it's like the fire code for the whole city, that the whole Bnei Ayir can be Makvin, because in their day especially, when fire caught in one house, it was usually a problem that it could spread significantly over a number of houses. So therefore, the Bnei Ayir, this is the rules. These are the fire codes of the city, and you have to respect those fire codes. Either way, what we see from Rabbi Shimon over here is that there is some sort of distancing that you can do to have a protected fire. So now the Gemara is going to explain. Oh, so what does he mean in the Mishnah? Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rabba, Barbu, Akolifi Gova Hadzaleika. It all has to do with the height of the fire, which is the way I would have read the Mishnah, the Pashup Shad and Rabbi Shimon in the Mishnah, is that Rabbi Shimon says, how could you give an objective standard of how far is considered to be safe distancing of a fire? That all depends on the size of the fire, right? You can't suggest that a little campfire and a large bonfire, right, require the same amount of distancing, right? They have to, can't be a single objective standard. Each fire or each flame has to do with how big the fire or the flame is, and that from there you can determine how wide an area you need to be considered to be safe. So he says that I don't agree with the previous Tanaim because they gave objective standards which are not necessarily true in all cases or situations. So Amar Rav Yosef, Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmo, Alocha, Rabbi Shimon, V'chein Amar Rav Nachman, Shmo, Alocha is like Rabbi Shimon, that it's a subjective, I mean, subjective to the size of the fire, what's considered to be safe or precautions, proper precautions. Right, next Mishnah. Amadli gata gadish, vayubo kelim vidilku. So he has lights a gadish, and when he lights the gadish, he also has to be, there's stuff buried in the gadish that burns up. Rabbi Yehuda omer mishleim ashevetocho. Rabbi Yehuda says you pay what's inside. This is Rabbi Yehuda l'shitato, which is, we've seen all over. But v'kama so far, Rabbi Yehuda believes tamun ba'esh is chayav. Chamim say he only pays for the chitim or the se'orim, again, because they believe tamun ba'esh is patur. But now, I mean, I'll point it out now, I think the Gemara will say it later also, which is the gadish shel chitim or shel se'orim means that the place that burnt up those items that were tamun in the gadish, it doesn't mean we don't look at it like it's airspace and he pays nothing. We look at it as if it was a completely full of chitim or completely full of se'orim. So he pays for the volume of seorim or chitim that are in that pile, even though inside are things that are buried that take up part of that space. So when he's patur, tamun patur, he's patur on that item, but he's still chayav for that volume of seorim or chitim, according to the chachamim. It's a good question. You know what, as I was saying it, I was thinking that, because all the examples the Gemara gives, you're going to see all the examples the Gemara gives are things that are more expensive. The Gemara never gives things that are less expensive, so I would... Right. So I would say it would be the lesser of. That's how I would look at it. The lesser of the tamun and the volume of what's there. I think that's the proper way to phrase it in order to fit in with the what I think the Gemara is suggesting. All the items or kelim that the Gemara discusses are very expensive items that are found in the Gadish. All right. So now this part of the Mishnah, again, is something that we've seen before a number of times in the Masechta. Ya Gadi Kafutlo. He lights the fire on the Gadish, and there was a goat that was tied to it. Ve'eved samuchlo, and there was an eved close by. Ve'nisrafimo, and everything was burnt up. Chayav, he's chayav according to Rashi, he's chayav on the gadish, and he's chayav on the gedi. Right, meaning that he's chayav on the gadish and the gedi, and he's patur on the eved because the eved should have been hayalo livrach. He should have run away. The gedi couldn't have run away because he was tied up, so he's chayav for that. And the gadish he's chayav for because it's what he burnt. On the other hand, Eved kafutlo, if the Eved is tied there, v'gedi samuchlo v'nisrafi mo patur. In this case, he's patur. Now, the question is, what is he patur from, and why is he patur? So the simple reading of this is that he's patur from the gadish. Right? He's patur from the gadish. But we're not discussing over here the gedi. On the other hand, there's a possibility that we're also discussing the gedi. Now, why is he patur for the gadish? It's because the Eved was tied there. Because the Eved was tied there, we have what's called kimlei, Dirabi Mine. So you have Kimle Dirabi Mine, that Kimle Dirabi Mine makes him patur from Tashlumim. So the reason he's patur for the Gadish is clear because he killed an Eved that was tied to the Gadish. The question by the Gdi, the goat, is why is he patur by the goat? There's two possibilities. He's either patur from the goat because it's also Kimle Dirabi Mine, and therefore he's patur, or the other possibility is that Hayelo Livroach, the Gadish should have run away. Meaning that why the Gdi wasn't tied up and there's a fire here, he should have ran away. Even though we saw before, early on, at the end of, I think, the fourth parak, we saw that when it came to placing a coal on a human being, we said that he should have taken the coal off. But when you place a coal on an animal, we don't say that the animal should have taken the coal off. So Rashi over here differentiates between the two. He says that's a different case. When you're talking about a fire that's coming towards an animal, there we say, Hayelo Livroach. A case when you put the coal directly on the animal, then we do not say that the animal has to throw it off or shake it off. We don't expect that from him. Rashi brings both interpretations down here about the Gdi. Rashi and Tosfos actually discussed it in the previous two times that we mentioned this, discussed the implications of what are the exact cases here, whether the Gdiyah is patur because of Kimalei D'Rabbeinu, or the Gdiyah is patur because of Shehayah Lo Livrach, and whether it's dafka, that the Gdiyah is kafut or not kafut, or the Gdiyah is just a prop that's going against the Eved. So when the real issue is whether the Eved's tied or not tied, and so all the Mishnah did was reverse the Gdiyah in these two cases, but not that it had real implications whether it was tied or not, because the patur here is Kimalei D'Rabbeinu, and him being tied or not being tied is irrelevant. Right, according to the second way he explained it, then his being tied and not being tied is relevant, because we could also say by the Gdi, Hayalo Livrach, it should have run away. Right now, Umodim Chachamin Rabbi Yehuda, but Madliket HaBira, when someone lights the friend's house on fire, Shumishalem Kol Mashem Betochai, pays for everything inside of it, Shekein Derech Bnei Adam, Laniach B'Batim. That's a normal place that people put stuff. And since that's a normal place that people put stuff, then he's going to be required to pay for it. Amar Rav Kahano. Rav Kahano says, Machloket B'Madlik B'Toch Shelo. The only machlok between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim is if he lights the fire in his own property, but then it goes and consumes in his friend's field. The Yehuda mechayev anizkei tamun be'esh. Rabbi Yehuda is mechayev an tamun ve'rabbeinu and patrei. Avav amadlik betok shel chavero. If he lights the fire in his friend's field, divrei hakol mishalem kol mashe betocho. Everybody agrees that he's chayav an tamun. So Mary says, Amar le'rova yehochi adatani seifem modim chachamim. Wait a minute. If that's the case, why did the Chachamim say, what's the case they agree to Rabbi Yehuda, b'madlik tabira? Why do you have to set up the case that he lit the house on fire? Shemeshalem kol mashu b'tocho. Shekem b'derech adam laniach v'atim. Lift log v'nit le'bidido. You could have created a case that is, right, singular. What's the singular case? Sadeh. You could have it both of them be fields. Why do you have to switch from his field to his friend's house? You could have said his field and his friend's field. What do you need to come to the house for? So that can't be their machloka, or the Chachamim can't agree in this case, because otherwise the Mishnah should have divided or said when the Chachamim agree is a much more narrow case. Why did they go all jump to Bira in order to get that case? There are two machlokot here between the Chachamim and Rav Yehuda. First machlok is plige b'madlik b'toch shalom. When he lights a fire on his own property, and then it goes and consumes in his friend's property, is mechayev anything that's found in that, whether it's normal or not normal to be in that pile, you're chayev for the tamun beish. Rabbanan say you're patur legamrei, no matter what. Doesn't matter what you have in there, whether it's normal to have it or not, you're patur. Now, next case. If you light a fire in your friend's field, there's also machokas. Again, Rabbi Yehuda believes you pay for everything in the Gadish, because you're chayav. When it comes to Tamun, you pay for anything there, even if it's unexpected items that are there. But filu anarki, even a wallet, which is not normally placed in the Gadish, you're still chayav. Rabbanan sabrei kelim shadar kamat min begadish, that only kelim that are normal to place in a Gadish, kagod morigin uklei bakarhu demishalim, there he pays. Kelim shein dar kamat min begadish, but things that you don't normally put there, like a wallet, right, lo mishalem, he's not chayav for. Why is this? What's the differentiation in the Chachamim's position? The Chachamim say tamun beish is patur. So how come all of a sudden over here they're saying tamun beish is chayav? So they say betoch shalo, it's patur tamun beish. Betoch chavero, then we start to differentiate between. Whether it's normal to play something there or not normal to play something there. Where did the Chachamim come up to such a position? So Tosfos explains the svar of the Chachamim. It's very interesting. And what does the pasuk say? The pasuk says kiteitze eish umatza kotzim. See, kiteitze eish is an implication that the fire was lit in your property and then moved, right? Kiteitze eish umatza kotzim. Then it left and moved from your property. So where do the Chachamim learn? They learn out from oakama. They learn out the ptur of tamun. So that's why the Chachamim's Ptur of Tamun only applies to fire that was lit in your property, because that's what the pasuk discusses. All right, now, when we're discussing someone else's property, all right, now, so you don't have the Ptur of Tamun, so you're chayav for articles that are normally placed in the Gadish. What about articles that are not normally in the Gadish? Tosfos says that's a Svara. Svara who? That's lo asuki adate. He doesn't have to consider that. When the fire is burning, he shouldn't have to consider the guy has a wallet in there. He has a stamp collection inside of the Gadish. That's not something that he should have considered. Clay, you know, Harisha, Morigin, things that are used normally in the fields, that he should expect to find in there, and therefore he's Chayav. So that's the Chachamim's position. The Chachamim's position is Tamun Beish is Patur. That's when you light the fire in your own property. Tamun Eish in someone else's property, you're Chayav for articles that should have been Asuke, that you should have considered, or should have anticipated being there, but you're not chayav for articles that are not anticipated. Rabbi Yehuda believes Tamun is always chayav. The mutz chayav, no matter where, what? Doesn't matter if you light it in your property, someone else's property, you're chayav for anything that is tamun. So that's the double machlokas here. So then the case where they do agree is bira. If you light the person's house on fire, in that case you're chayav. Why? Because now we see tamun beish is only patur when it's lit in your property. You lit the fire on this guy's house, so then you don't have the patur of tamun. What about the svara? The svara is that it should have been what's asuke adate, lo asuke adate. The svara, when you light it in your friend's field, is what's normally there, what's not normally there. What does the Mishnah say? Mishnah says, in a house, everything is normal to be there. You can expect when you light a house on fire that you can find anything in the world in there because that's where people keep their things, in their house. So no matter what's in there is considered to be normal, and you're going to be chayav for everything in that case, in that instance, according to the Chachamim. Now, Tana Rabbanan. It's a gzeres hakatuv. It's a gzeres hakatuv. The tamun beish is chayav. No matter what's in there, it doesn't matter. It's irrelevant what's there, what's not there. If it's tamun beish, you're chayav. That's the Rabbi Yehuda's position. Right? Tan Rabbanan. Amadagiyata gadish vayubo kelim vidoku. It was amadagagish, there were kelim inside and they got fire. Rabbi Yehuda omer mishalem kol mashayav betucho. Pays whatever's in there because tamun beish is chayav. Chamim omer, inu mishalem ala gadish shel chitim o gadish shel tzarim. And we look at the place of the kelim as if they were filled with tvua. And again, I would qualify, I think, Shoal, you're right, that I would qualify that assumes that you pay the lesser of what's there, meaning that we're not going to make you chayav for paying for chitim and sorim if there were cardboard boxes filling in the area where it was something of valueless that was in that space. But when is this true? But madlik betoch shelo. That's only when he lights in his own property, and then it went to his friend's property. If he lights it in his friend's property, then he has to pay whatever is found in there. Right? He pays for whatever is normally in there. And Rabbi Yehuda agrees to the Chamim, but Mashil Makom Lechavero. If he lends a piece of his property for his friend to stack his stuff or put his things there, like Dish Gadish, to put a pile or Tuah there to silo something, but Gadish Vihitmin. Then he put up a Gadish and he was Tamun something in there, Shem Mashalam El Deme Gadish, Bilvad. He only pays for the Gadish. Because, like Dish Kitim, Vigdish Sorim, if he told him you could have permission to put wheat and instead he put barley, Sorim Vigdish Chitim, if he told him barley and he put Chitim, Chitin v'chipan b'sorim. He put wheat, and then he put on top of the wheat, he put barley. Sorim v'chipan v'chitin, shem v'shalom el demei sorim bilvad. In all these instances, he only paid demei sorim, because that's what he gave him permission to put there. He told him, listen, you can put a gadish there. And so first of all, I don't have to worry about tamun, because the only thing I gave you permission to do was put your wheat or silo your stuff there. You tamun, that's not something I have to expect. I didn't give you permission. I didn't lend out my property to put all your safekeepings there. And number two, when it comes to sorim, right, we say that he's only chayav demei sorim because in all these instances, he doesn't have to, he says, look, I saw sorim. If I see sorim, and that's what I give you permission to put there, then why am I going to be chayav for anything else? Meaning that it's not my responsibility. I can only be responsible for, number one, what I see, and number two, what I gave permission to do. So I can't be chayav for more than I gave permission for. Number two is I can't be chayav for more than what I see in front of me. Because if he says to him, listen, why do you care? You mean it was chitim that burnt? You should pay me for chitim. He'll say, no, I saw sorim. I said, you know what? That's cheaper stuff. So I'll let it burn and I'll pay you for it. Had I known it was chitim, then I wouldn't have let the fire go. I would have tried to do something to stop the fire in order that I wouldn't have to pay you so much. So in all of these instances, right, he's only pays the demei sorim. And all these cases seem to be cases, again, where he was madlik b'shel shalo, when he lit his own property and it spread over to the, right, into the, you know, into that other area or the area where he gave permission to put it down, or he couldn't have known that it was the, he shouldn't have known or wasn't aware that there's other items there besides what he had given permission to place there at this point in time. All right, we'll stop over here. All right, have a great Shabbos, and,